But what happened is just to summarize, we have Shimon HaTzadik had all four positions. He was Avbezin, Nasi, Kohen Gadol, and tax collector. When he passed away, his brother became Kohen Gadol. His brother was not able to, was not a Talmud Chacham enough. He wasn't able to, he wasn't the Avbezin and Nasi. That they took away from him, and that became Antigonus Ishsoko. Antigonus Ishsoko took both positions, and when he passed away, then started the era of the Zugos, which was Yosef ben Yochanan and Yosef ben Yehuza. They split it, Yosef ben Yehuza being the Nasi, Yosef ben Yochanan being the Avbezin. And the Zugos continued for the next about 200 years until Herod came in, and then they basically the Frum community, or the Perushim, as they were known then, they went and they became the Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, and they were afraid to do too many things that would get Herod in, get on the screen of Herod. Yes. Ah, yes. I was going to get to that. Okay. So then came Elazar and Elazar, Menashe and Menashe. Now, what happened is in the time of Yosef ben Yochanan and Yosef ben Yehuza, the Kohen Gadol was Chonyo. It was the second Chonyo. And this is really, we're going to get a little bit ahead of the story, but we're going to come back and see it from the outside. What happened is Chonyo, being the head of the tax collector, he made a very big mistake. And for whatever reason, he decided not to send the taxes to Egypt. It was Talmai the Third at the time. Now, as you could imagine, you know, Talmai the Third was not very happy. And the way they really ruled Judah, the way it was called Judah, the land was through taxes. You pay us taxes and we leave you alone. And in reality, we're going to see, based on the Northern Empire, the Southern Empire really did. They had a tremendous amount of autonomy. And he didn't send the taxes, and nobody, it's not really clear why. I saw it on a footnote somewhere that it said that he was thinking that maybe Antigonus from the Northern Empire said, listen, don't pay the taxes, and if you get into, and if Talmai gives you a hard time, I'll come and I'll protect you. But in any case, it caused a panic in the people of Israel, and it seems that they got word that Talmai was not happy and he was preparing for war. Israel itself at the time, the Jewish people at the time, had no army whatsoever, no standing army, nothing. They weren't in the business of war. They were, you know, just people. They didn't have a standing army at all. So that would have been terrible. I mean, that would have been like, you know, very, very bad. What happened is Chonyo had a nephew by the name of Yosef ben Tovia. And Yosef ben Tovia says, you know what? Let me go down and I'll talk to Talmai and I'll see what I can do. And Yosef was a talented person. He was a charismatic personality. It was a dangerous mission, and he went down there and he spoke to Talmai and he got it all, you know, all straightened out. Okay, the only thing is, you know, when they have the secret meetings, what the secret clauses was is that the position of tax collector is going to be taken away from Chonyo and it was going to be given to Yosef ben Tovia. Now, this is when the tax collecting, as we said before, the tax collecting office is now going to become very corrupt, because Yosef ben Tovia is going to use it to get himself a tremendous amount of power. He's going to use it, he's going to tax people he doesn't like and not tax people he does like. He's going to collect a certain amount of taxes and send it, and the extra taxes he's going to keep for himself. And this position of tax collector is going to stay in the family of Yosef ben Tovia for the next a long amount of time. Now, the reason why I'm bringing this out is because you already see what's going to happen internally in Israel is when you're going to have different factions. So you're going to have like a four-ring. So it's going to look like maybe the Knesset today in Eretz Israel, like, right? You know, everybody is in it for himself, and everybody has something else going on. So the truth is, though, the Avbezin and the Nasi, they're really always going to work hand in hand. They are going to represent the Perushim or the Pharisees. This is And they are always going to have the majority of the people. The majority of the people are going to follow the Chachamim. Besides being in charge of the law, the oral law, but they also became the people in charge of the education of the country. So the schools and all the education and everything, that all went through the Abes Din and the Nasi. What's going to happen is that when you have a Kohen Gadol who is on your side, that's going to be great. Chanya was good. He was a good Kohen Gadol. He was on the side of the Chachamim. Yosef Ben Tuvia already was more Hellenized. And what's going to happen is as we're going to go down in history, we're going to see that your Kohen Gadol at some point is going to become a Hellenized. And then when the Chashmonaim come in, you're going to start over again. Originally, the original Chashmonaim are going to be on the side of the Chachamim, and as they get down, there's going to be less and less trust, and they're going to be more and more against the Chachamim. And we're going to have times of mamash civil war between the Chachamim and not the Chachamim. Let's see the next slide. So this is internally what's going on. This is just a list of the Kohanim Gedolim. And this is what I mentioned over here. This is Onias 2. This is where he loses the tax collector. Then Onias 3. This is where we're gonna come in soon in our story, where actually Jason is Hellenized. He's a Hellenized Kohen Gadol, and we're gonna even get to Melanias, who wasn't even from the tribe of Levi. But that's going ahead of our story. And when I mentioned last time, Onias 4, he's the one who was he had a brother between Chonyo and his brother Shimi, and Shimi went ahead and it depends who told what, and Shimi told him to wear a dress, and he wore a dress, and they wanted to kill him, and he said, "What do you want from me?" You know, it was Shimi that did it. In any case, Chonyo ended up running away, and he made a Beis HaMikdash in Egypt. So this is what this is the Chonyo that we mentioned last time. Okay, let's go on to the next. Okay. Now, before we go to the Northern Empire, just what the Jews had. Now, this was working for about 100 years. Okay? Alexander the Great came on the scene about 320 before the Common Era. For about 20 years, it took until all the pieces fit together, and they all, things settled down in which part of the everybody got their pieces and where all the empires fell and the borders and everything. So from about 300 BCE until 200 BCE, we were under the Southern Empire. And what the Jews had under the Southern Empire is, first of all, the political rule was very benign. They didn't mess with the political rulings, and things were going at least smoothly inside. There wasn't as much internal strife. The Chachamim, again, this was all set up from the Anshei Knesset Gdola, Ezra and Anshei Knesset Gdola. They set up a working Sanhedrin. They also set up a great job in economically. They set up a landowner merchant type of economy. See, a lot of free people, they had their own land, and they were merchants, and they were craftsmen, and it was like a large middle class type of society. Free people, they could, and they were on their own. The Hellenists, those that were being influenced by the Talmud, started on top. The richer ones started on top, but as you can see, what happened is eventually this Hellenism started to spread and spread and spread. And the Ptolemaic Hellenism ravaged the Jewish society. It just started coming everywhere. And it was like a new thing that hit the scene, like we mentioned, and people thought it was attractive. And they had a system and a thought, and it was provocative, and it was very enticing, and it had an appeal to the Jewish people. And the Rabbanim at the time, they try to tell what's wrong with it. It's very, very difficult, because outside they're nice, and you could talk to them, and it's pleasant, and they're not being very, very aggressive against you. You don't see the undercurrents. Chachamim at the time did see it, but they didn't see underneath. And probably that would be very probably similar to is when, you know, Germany, you know, the Reform Germany, when Reform hit the scene in Germany, they swept the boards. It's in the 1800s, the late 1800s, about 90% of the Jews in Germany became Reform. Only about 10% remained Frum. We're like the two communities that we're familiar with is Rav Shaul Shlomo Hirsch's community and Rav Bamberger's community, and even here and there, and in all the different communities, you always had like Frum people, pockets of Frum people in the different communities, but they swept the boards, and this is what was happening in Israel at the time, and you see how Hashem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, had it continued, who knows, they would have beat us, they would have won us just by nice assimilation, you know, just let it all happen. And you're going to see that the Northern Empire has a different way of dealing with everything. They control by taxation. One of the things they kept doing, they kept building Greek cities. And in the Greek cities, they had the gymnasiums, and they had their sports, and they had their, you know, all, everything that they did, and it was just seeping into the Jewish people. I just wanted to mention here, because we're going to come to it again, so I'm going to go to the Northern Empire. But the last Talmai, the last king of the Southern Empire, before they lost control, was Talmai the fourth. Actually, the fifth. His son was going to lose it, but he was somewhat of an arrogant person. He actually wanted to take money from the Beis HaMikdash. So when he came to Jerusalem, he walked in the Beis HaMikdash to take the money. He was told not to. Nobody could stop him. He walked inside, and he fell unconscious. And when he woke up, he left. I don't know whatever image he saw, but he got very, very scared. He left. He didn't take anything. A miracle happened that he fainted. But when he left, it's not like he said, wow, these people are great. He left. He had a hatred for the Jews. So that's something that happened, and it happened probably towards the end of his life, closer to two. He died in 205 before the Common Era. So that's the thing I wanted to just mention now. But the Jews are now going to go. They're going to go from a different type of a ruling system. They're going to go from a very nice and calm, and like everything is just nice for them, to the Northern Empire. The Northern Empire, their Hellenism was not as, you know, thinking and flowery and everything. However they understood things, they did it, and you do it my way, and that's it. And they were very heavy-handed. Anytime they got a little vassal country, they came in with force. And they everything was coerced. It was like forced, but there's no convincing. There's no arguments. You do it my way or the highway or whatever. And that's what the Northern Empire was known to do. That's the way they dealt with their vassals and everybody around them. Which you could see, you know, the Jews being a stiff-necked people, you know, that's just it's an amazing thing. You know, you let the Jews do what they want, and you know, you see where they go. You tell them they can't do something. Oh, what do you mean I can't do it? You know, but that's what's going to happen. That's what we're about to come to now. Now, when we get to the Northern Empire, we're just going to do that now. It really is. You could say it's going to be like a mini series. You know, it's going to be every day. There's going to be something every year. Every few years, it's going to be something going on, and it's going to be like one event after another event after another event. And you're going to deal with the Northern Empire against the Southern Empire, and you also now have in the backdrop Rome is coming, and Rome is coming to become a superpower. And it would be like comical, because things are going to repeat itself, and except for the fact that the Jews are really going to be caught in the middle. And things that they do or don't do, it's just gonna could be the end of it could be a, could start a major war, and that's all only if it's outside. You know, outside they have to deal with the Syrians, they're gonna have to deal with the Romans, and they're gonna have to deal with the Southern Empire, the Talmais. But and then you're putting together the Hellenized Jews and your non-Hellenized Jews, and then you got looks like today, you know, in Israel. You know, besides, it's not enough that we have to fight, you know, have to fight countries around us and Hamas and Hezbollah and everything, but then we have the circus that goes on among ourselves. So that's pretty much what's going to happen now during the second temple. During this time, there's one more thing I wanted to deal with, and that's with something I'm sure we've heard. And Togun Ishisoko had a statement, and it says, "Al tishamish es harav al manat lekabel pras." Don't serve your Rebbe, your master, in order to get reward, but you should fear your master, shalom manat lekabel pras, not to get reward. Vehi mor shmaim aleihem, and the fear of God would be on you. So Chazal tell us, the Mefarshim explain, that there happened to have been. Sure. I don't know how. Yeah, that was good. That's good. Good. Okay. So the fear. So what happened is he had two students, Sadik and Bisis. Okay, and these two students came up with a new religion almost a Torah Shabbat and not a Torah Shabbat Peh. So if you ever hear, you ever learned in the Gemara about Sadukim, this is where it came in. I guess it came in with the times. You know, you have the times of free thinking and different types of thoughts. So they also had a different type of thought, and they denied Torah Shabbat Shabbat Peh and pretty much Torah Shabbat Sav. And these tzedukim were thorns in the side all the way through the second base of Mikdash. They made good. So now you have the Perushim, you had the tzedukim, and you had the Hellenized Jews. You know, so and it made a nice mix. Often the tzedukim often sided with the Hellenized Jews, and together they were against the Perushim. And that's the last thing I wanted to bring up. They had just different ideas. One is only the upper class should be the rulers, and the other says no, anybody could be the rulers. They're looking for opportunists. They rejected different. This is, you know, certain, like, you know, the elitists in certain countries today. It looks very, very familiar. Okay, now let's start going. Okay, when this, now we're going to the Northern Empire. The first thing that happened is. Well, the first thing is, the first leader was a person by the name of Seleucus. That's where the Seleucid Empire, again, if I don't pronounce the words correctly, please forgive me, the Seleucid Empire. So for the first, like 100 years, or, you know, almost, everything was, you know, they had about four or five rulers, and everything was, you know, it was a solid empire. It wasn't that big. The Talmai Empire was way up into, past Lebanon, into Syria. But they had, you had the Seleucid, followed by Antiochus I, followed by Antiochus II. He was 40 years, and then another 20 years, and another 15 years, and again another 20 years. So it was pretty solid, nothing doing that much. And what now comes to us is, after Seleucid III takes till about 222, what the first person that really comes and has an effect that really has to our history is Antiochus III the Great. Okay, the Hanukkah Antiochus is number four. Okay, so this is the father of number four of Antiochus. So we're the story of Hanukkah is going to start to take place around the year 170 before the Common Era. That's when things are going to start to heat up, all the way through 165. I think the actual Hanukkah was 165 or 164 before the Common Era. So comes along Antiochus III the Great, and this is what the Seleucid Empire looked like in the very beginning. And again, here is Eretz Yisrael, and Eretz Yisrael is basically was part of the Talmai Empire, and Antiochus III, he started a series of wars. He started to attack. He ruled from 222 to 187. Now, in 219, this is the fourth Syrian war, and he conquered part of Antiochus, and they made a peace in 217. In 205, Ptolemy IV becomes ill. Okay, now, he was the one, keep in mind, he also, Talmi 4 was the one that went into the Beis HaMikdash. He was the one that tried to come to the Beis HaMikdash. I don't know if he became ill because he went into the Beis HaMikdash, but probably shortly afterwards he became ill. Now, when he became ill, Antiochus and Philip V from Macedonia, they said, hey, this is our chance. Let's go and let's see if we can take over what we can get. Let's go to war against the Talmais. So now we're going to start the Fifth Syrian War. And it's a coin of Antiochus III. Okay, so what happened is, now in 2004, okay, Antiochus Talmai 4 dies and Talmai 5 takes over. Talmai 5 was very young, or he was a terrible ruler. He didn't have control of his army, and they lost a lot. In other words, Antiochus 3 was able to get a lot. In the year 2000, he loses the Talmais. They lose a lot of area in Asia. And Antiochus, actually, by the year 200, they were already in Judah. So the war, the front of the war, was moving down. And by 198, in 2 years, Judah was now under the Northern Empire. What happened is, now, Rome was now becoming the big guy on the block. And what people were afraid of Rome. So Rome came in and sent a message to Macedonia and said to Macedonia, listen, if you don't stop your war against the Southern Empire, against the Talmais, we're coming in and we're going after you. And when they were threatened with that, so the Macedonians pulled out, King Philip pulled out, and it was then just the Talmais. So then Roman went to the Antiochus and he says, you better stay away from Egypt. Why did the Romans want Antiochus to stay away from Egypt? Because the Romans had a base. The Romans were very, they had a lot of bases all around the world. And they had a port. And their base, they had a base in Egypt. And they were afraid if Antiochus would go ahead and capture Egypt, so then they would lose their base. And they used that. They had men there, and that was where they brought their boats and their ships, and they supplied. Eventually, they're going to have something in Israel. They don't have anything yet in Israel, and it's going to be one of the Hashmonaim for help against a war against the Syrians. They're going to actually give them a port, give them Caesarea, which was going to be built as a Roman city. But at this point, they said to Antiochus III, you better stop, otherwise we're coming after you. Okay. And they sort of stopped. So they ended up with Yehuda, Judah, and they stopped before they got to Egypt. Now, what happens? Okay. So now what happens is back at the ranch, or back at the other side of the war, there's another war going on. And this other war happens to be between Carthage and Rome. And we'll probably, I want to get more into it when we get more into Rome. But basically, Carthage and Rome had that part of the world, which is more on the western part of the world. There was a competition between the two. And Carthage had a general by the name of Hannibal. And I don't know if anybody knows, but Hannibal did amazing things. He must have been some type of a person, an amazing general. And what he did is, again, we'll discuss it later, but he actually took elephants and he went up through Spain into France, somehow over the Swiss Alps, and came in and attacked Rome from the north. The Romans weren't expecting, they were expecting the Carthages to come through the sea, which they were across the Mediterranean Sea, and he pretty much sacked Rome. He made a mistake by not finishing the job, and then the Rome got itself together. And like in the Second Punic War or the Third Punic War, the Romans went ahead, and what Carthage did to Rome, Rome did to Carthage, and flattened the city. But they weren't as nice as the Carthaginians, and they gave much harsher terms. If you want to rebuild your city, you build it on another place. And In all that happened, Hannibal, the general, escaped. And he ended up going to Antiochus III. Okay? And he convinced Antiochus III to attack Greece and to attack, I guess, maybe it would be a declare a war on Rome. And Rome did not like that at all. First of all, I guess Rome didn't like Hannibal to begin with. And Antiochus took on Hannibal's advice, decided to go ahead and attack other things. That was a big mistake. First mistake is going to war against Rome, and the second bigger mistake is losing. Okay, because when you lose, that's it. Rome doesn't. They were very, very harsh terms. Now, there was something called the Peace of, again, I don't know how to say it, Apamea, which a lot of things had to happen with this peace. They lost, and because of that, they had to cede a lot of territory. And I think on the next slide I have more of it. Romans defeat Carthage. Keep going. Hannibal takes refuge. Hannibal convinces Antiochus to attack. Rome declares war against Antiochus. Rome defeats and captures Antiochus. Rome strips Antiochus III of Asia Minor and forces him to surrender his navy. So that's two things. First of all, he lost a lot of places in Asia Minor, and a big thing is he lost his navy. They said, you can't have a navy anymore. Keep going. Now, what else was? Rome demands a large payments. Oh, just go back one. Okay. Rome demands a large payment. So besides losing your navy and losing a lot of area, territories, but now Antiochus is going to have to pay a large bribe, taxes or whatever, to Rome every year. And where is he going to get this money? Where is this empire going to get a lot of its money? So basically what they're going to have to do is they're going to have to fundraise. And how do you fundraise? You fundraise, you go to a temple, that there's a lot of money in a temple, and you raid it for money. So Rome, besides that, there's also one other thing, which is Rome's policy. And what they did is, in order to make sure that you fulfill the terms of the agreement, you have to leave your son or a very close relative in Rome. And what he does is he gets educated in Rome. We're going to see with Herod's children that Herod also had to leave some of his children to get educated in Rome. And we're going to see that there was one of his children, one of the Agrippas of Rome, was educated in Rome, became friends with all of the Caesars that were to be, you know, and he did a tremendous help for the Jews at the time. You know, one Agrippa, which was a Chachamim, talked very highly of, and he almost pulled it all together, you know, saving the Jews from the eventual destruction. But that was the policy. So Antiochus had to send his son, which was Antiochus IV, which is our Antiochus, we're familiar, and he had to send him to Rome. And you get educated in Rome, you hang out in Rome, and if the father doesn't fulfill any of the terms, you take care of the son. You have to pay heavy taxes. And what happened is that Antiochus went ahead and attacked a country, Susa. There was a temple in Susa, I'm not exactly sure where it is, and tried to get the money from there, and he was killed. That's the end of Antiochus the Third. What happens afterwards? Who takes over? So what happens is then Antiochus Seleucus IV takes over. Now Seleucus is Antiochus's brother. Okay, we'll see. Let's see in the next slide. Let's just see what the next slide says. Yeah. Okay. And this is where Antiochus III had two sons. He had Antiochus IV and he had Seleucus. Okay, Seleucus IV. Antiochus IV was in Rome at the time, and he had another son, Seleucus. Seleucus becomes the new emperor. Okay, now when that happens, so Rome wants an exchange of prisoners. He says, okay, we're going to send Antiochus back home, but we want your son Demetrius to come to Rome, and he's going to be the new hostage. Okay, if you move back one. Okay, so Seleucus, again, he sent back his son Demetrius, and then Antiochus. Now, you're going to have already, also in the Northern Empire, two separate, you know, competing types of, you know, Baruch Hashem, you know, not only among us do we have that issues, brothers fighting for control, you know, other countries also have it, so it's not an exclusive, it's not for us. The okay, now what happens is Seleucus, he needs money. So what does he do? He sends his general, Heliodorus, to go ahead and get money from the temple. Now, this wasn't just Stomp to send money. Actually, the Hellenists, who were in Israel at the time, actually provoked this. They actually sent money to Seleucus, and they said, listen, you know, there's money in the temple. Why don't you try to, you know, get some of the money, help yourself? So he sent his commander, Heliodorus, and Heliodorus went to the temple, and the same thing happened to him as happened to Ptolemy the Fourth. He walked in, he was begged, Chonio the Second was the Kohen Gadol at the time, and he said, don't do it, please. And in fact, he walked inside, he became unconscious, he fainted, and he came back out, he was scared, he just went back to Rome. Now, the one or two sources that I saw outside of Jewish sources that spoke about this, it just says he was unsuccessful. He tried to raid it, he was unsuccessful. But Rabbi Wein says it was, he walked inside, a miracle, a miracle happened. He fell unconscious, he might have seen some sort of a vision, it scared him and he went back. Now, Heliodorus is going to eventually assassinate Seleucus. He's going to eventually, I'm not sure why, here it is. Heliodorus eventually, he kills Seleucus, and that's in 175. And now, we're set. So again, Seleucus is now dead, okay? Antiochus is dead. Seleucus is now dead. His son Demetrius was in Rome. And Antiochus now is now the new emperor. And now, we're down 175. And now we're getting closer now. We're 175. We'll get to Jason in a second. And, okay, let me just see what the next one says. Okay. Antiochus, Epiphanes. So Epiphanes means manifestation of God. He held himself to be the reincarnation of Alexander the Great. He held himself to be a god. He had people worship him, bring sacrifices to him. The Jews, they called him Epimanes. Epimanes means the madman. Okay, so he was, but that's the type of person he was. And you realize that that's not going to be a good mix with Jews, because again, he's very heavy-handed. He himself believes himself as a god. Now, he thinks himself as Alexander the Great. He wants to build that empire again the way it was. He's going after the Southern Empire as well, and he's, that's what he's looking to do. Almost like, who was it that in Iraq or Iran? The Iran, he thinks he's Saddam Hussein thought he was the reincarnation of Nebuchadnezzar, something like that. Yeah. And he has grand ideas of like taking over the world, and he thinks, you know, and it's not a good mix for a ruler of a nation that has means to think that he is somebody else or some god. It's going to run into problems. Anyway, what then happens is, again, we mentioned again, Talmai 6 takes over. Talmai 6 is also very young, I guess, on the Talmais. But is very young. He attacks, and he builds a navy again against the Turks, conquers Cyprus, parts of Egypt, and he's now the big tzaddik here. You know, he's going to take over. He's the protector of Talmai the Sixth, poor young kid. And against his relative Talmai the Eighth. Now, what happened is, I think I may have missed this before, but what was happening even now is that the daughters of one empire, the Northern Empire, were marrying the rulers of the Southern Empire. So they were really all married into each other. They were pretty much related to each other. And what happened is he pretty much got it, but while he got it, Rome came in and said, you better get back now. That's it.
No more.
That's it. Story. The game's up. And when that happened, so he came back, and he was now, I guess, upset, or he wants to still, he's not finished with the designs on getting Egypt, but now he's going to focus his attention on the Jews. I think you can go back one. Okay, so what did he do? He went ahead and the Kohen Gadol at the time was Chonyo the Third. Hold on, let's check what we said before. Chonyo the Third was the new Kohen Gadol, was the Kohen Gadol at the time, and he was good. At the time, the Zugos was Yeshua ben Prachya and Nita Horbeli. These were the two, the Av Bezdin and the Nasi. And what happened is Chonyo the Third had a brother. His brother was Jason. Jason was a very Hellenized Kohen. And Jason went ahead and he went to Antiochus the Fourth, and he said to Antiochus, "You install me as Kohen Gadol and I'll get you what you want." And he did. He took Chonyo and, you know, deposed him, and he installed Jason as the new Kohen Gadol, like having a Kohen Gadol. That's not from. Not only did he whatever practices he changed or didn't do in the Beis HaMikdash, he also built next to the Beis HaMikdash a big gymnasium. And in that gymnasium they did everything you would do in a Greek Olympics or whatever. You have sacrifices to gods, and there were competitions, you know, without clothing, and it was all things just to really try to Hellenize the country in a very big way. After about 2 or 3 years of this, and he, part of it was, as Jason was, as he bribed the king, he bribed Antiochus to let him be the king. Where did he get the money from? So Jason went into the Beis HaMikdash and he took the money and he gave it to him. You know, they were going in, they were fainting, but Jason, who was the Kohen Gadol, took from the Beis HaMikdash to pay off to get himself as king, as Kohen Gadol. Now what happened is 2-3 years afterwards, it was Menelaus. So he was a different person, and he was a tax collector at the time, where he was. He went to Antiochus and he said, "If you let me be the Kohen Gadol, so then I'll give you even more money. I'll Hellenize." You know, as much as Jason was Hellenizing the Jews, it wasn't enough. It wasn't quick enough. It wasn't fast enough. You know, it's just, you know, they just, it's, you're not doing enough at the time. So he went for it, and he got Menelaus to go ahead and be the new Kohen Gadol. Menelaus was not even a Kohen. He was from a different tribe.
But these guys going in and doing the Avodah.
I had the same question. I don't know. It could be maybe he wasn't. Maybe the actual Avoda, or maybe they even stopped it at this time. You're talking now about 171. It could be during this time already. This could have been the time when already that's it. There was no Avoda being done, or much less. And now, because now you're talking about the time that, you know, I guess this is really what I wanted to end over here, but this is where we're coming up to. The people as a whole are going to have enough, and there's going to be a civil war. There's actually going to be a civil war with Menelaus and his brother Lysias. Let's see, his brother's going to be his general. All right. Any questions on this? Or okay. So now we're up to Hanukkah. So we're going to come back. We're going to hit the story of what's going on. You have a Kohen Gadol that's not a Kohen, and you have this Antiochus the Fourth, who is very heavy-handed. He wants to change the people. He wants to change the front. The main people, even if they're not from like the Purushim, but they very follow themselves. They feel very still closely attached to the Southern Empire. And if Antiochus IV has more designs on taking over the Southern Empire, he needs the people in Israel to be related or closely aligned with the Northern Empire, and that's where he can start his new offense, his new front to go and continue taking the Southern Empire. He's not realizing what he's going to be in. There's going to be a little bit of a civil war between the Kohanim and between the Jews, and we're going to see Jason's going to make a comeback, and Chonyo is going to try to come back, and I think Chonyo is going to be assassinated. But this is where we're up to here, and then follows the events where with the Hashem.